Well, welcome everyone to the afternoon panel on growing hemp, learning from the farmers, from the people who are doing it. We have a very august group today, farmers from Kentucky, from Oregon, from Hawaii. Anyone else? So I'm going to let them introduce themselves because they certainly know themselves better than I do. But my name is Zev Pace. I'm the executive director of the National Hemp Association, and we're a membership organization that encompasses all of the different entities who are growing hemp. So, hello. Okay. So as I said, my name is Zev Pace, and I am the executive director of the National Hemp Association. And we believe that we need to support all aspects of the hemp industry, subset of the cannabis industry, here at the Oregon Hemp Convention. And as far as I'm concerned, industrial hemp starts in the ground. It starts with growing the crop. And my experience is the rock stars of this industry are the farmers. And we have some of the best rock stars on the stage today that you'll ever meet. So without further ado, I'm going to let them talk for themselves. I'll give them each a few minutes to talk about what they're doing, what their issues are, what their successes have been in each of their locations, and then questions from the audience as well as questions from each other, because I know they can learn from one another as well. So, first farmer, Jerry Norton from Salem, Oregon.
Hi, you guys. So, first of all, with our hemp farming this year, we're really, first of all, as you well know, we're proud to get everything in the ground. And that was a major accomplishment because, first of all, we tried to cooperate and do everything, and we still are, by the rules. And unfortunately, sometimes those rules don't work to our benefit whatsoever. So what we've done is we've moved forward in our own right to try to get done what we have done to this point. So we were counting on the Oregon State University to help us get some seed in, and they kind of dropped the ball, that term's used sometimes, on us. And so we were kind of at a loss. We got a real late start here in Oregon, okay? We planted on July 1st, and we got it in the ground, and we did our plant was a 106-day plant. So we got it up in 106 days. We are harvested, we're in the Willamette Valley, so we're actually in Salem, Oregon, right out of Salem, Oregon, in Silverton, Oregon. We got it into the ground, and it came up beautiful. We did a, just like grass seed, we did a broadcast, and so it came up really, really good. We used no pesticides, and when we went to our fields, it was amazing. It was like an electric field out there. There was literally thousands and thousands of bees. And so this is so good for our environment, too. We're thinking, wow, this is just eco-friendly. You know, we're having a bee shortage, too, at the same time. So it's doing other things than just hemp. It's so friendly for our environment. So we got it into the ground. And what we're doing right now is we have a number of greenhouses. And what we're doing is research and development in these greenhouses. So we have a number of different strains that we're working with. And we actually did take the marijuana plant and put it into one of our greenhouses. And we put the hemp plant in there as well. And we were wondering, hey, you know, there's so much talk and controversy about cross-pollination. And we're like, okay, let's do a test. And we even took a marijuana plant and grafted it to a hemp plant to see if it would cross-pollinate. Now, we don't have every, you know, genetic, of course, but we have the genetics that we were working with. And sure enough, it didn't cross-pollinate. So we were totally happy with that because that's big ground for us. We're on seed right now that's under the 1% mark. And we also have seed that has some medicinal value with the CBD. So we're really happy with that. So not only can we do the Doug Fine tri-cropping thing, we might do a little quad-cropping this year. So we're actually bringing in some professionals from Colorado that have done this before. And we're doing some shooting through Supercritical and getting CBD content out of it. And it's working really well. So this is a cash crop that is going to be amazing not only in Oregon, but throughout the United States. So from this point forward, I only got 5 minutes. I could talk up here for about a half hour, okay? But I'm going to turn the mic over to the next person in line here. We got a number of farmers that want to talk a little bit about what they're doing. But I truly believe that we've done a lot of things wrong for a long time. But I think we're doing a lot of things right real fast right now. So get on the hemp train, people. And here's another one of our educated speakers.
Thank you. So our next speaker is going to be Mike Lewis from Kentucky, also the founder of the Growing Warriors Project.
Educated in Kentucky in the same sentence. Thank you. I can stand, yeah. On my family's farm, as I said a little earlier, we're a small, sustainable, organic farm. So the bulk of our production is for regional artisan markets. We try to add as much value on our family's farm before it goes to market as we possibly can to help. You know, I have to make a living as a farmer. So I am not expressly a hemp farmer. I am a sustainable farmer that uses hemp in a fiber crop rotation with my vegetables for my CSA. And, you know, we graze our hogs through after we're done. So I'm not expressly farming hemp. You know, again, a bulk of what I do is fiber crops, working really hard to find a strain that will allow us to use Doug's tri-cropping method so that we can reach higher revenues and ultimately keep our crops out of the commodity market. A lot of what we do, thank you. A lot of what we do is, you know, is geared towards older world. We work with the Amish, our equipment's older. You know, I don't live in a region where I have hundreds of acres, so our average tobacco base in our communities are, you know, 2 to 5 acre plots. So I can't buy a combine to bring that in. So a lot of what we're doing is retrofitting older equipment from the tobacco and the corn industry to harvest those crops. Couple different fiber crops we're doing, but really trying to find the one strain that will give us the best of all three products from the plant. And
yeah, great. Thank you. Our next speaker is Edgar Winter, who is an Oregon farmer. You probably, most of you know him. He's also the very first recipient of the first hemp permit here in Oregon.
So. I'm an old man, so I'm going to continue to sit down here and talk. It's a lot easier for me. Yes, I am a farmer here in Oregon. I've been farming here for about 35 years. I did have a hemp crop this year. It wasn't what I wanted, but like I say, the 11th hour, we finally got an okay to put some seeds into the ground. And thanks to one of the other farmers here, he helped me out with some seed stock to put into the ground. We weren't that successful as far as yield, but we did get a lot of seed stock established, so we'll see what happens. I'm also a farmer in Colorado. I have 60 acres of hemp in Colorado that I just came back that we harvest. We have about 80,000 pounds of seeds and about 40 tons of hemp fiber, and the list goes on and on and on, and we're really successful in Colorado. So we hope to do that here next year here in Oregon as well. And Lynn, sitting next to me, she's the second licensee, and her and I, we formed a corporation, and we're involved with processing the hemp products as well as the marijuana products. We do both. We like cannabis just as much as we do hemp, so we're much involved with, we're growing both of those, and we're trying to take it to the ultimate and getting high CBDs and low CBDs and high THC and low THC. So we're doing the whole gamut, and we're trying to formulate medicine that will cater to each and every one of us, not from 2 years old to 90 years old. So we're happy to be involved with growing hemp here in Oregon for the first year, and we hope to be here for four more years.
And as Edgar said, I am the second recipient to hold the industrial hemp license to grow and cultivate. And I am now business partners with Edgar Winters, very, very proud of being business partners with him. And a little bit of my background, I became interested in the hemp products while I was training for the Olympics for 8 years in Colorado. And I had some health concerns and just started studying natural medicine. But I've always liked the forest and I've always loved to be out there. And I started doing the CBD and noticed some huge differences. And then I kept looking at the environment and seeing the impact that what the environment has been impacted greatly of what we've done to it. So not only that, with my research, I forwarded off to my husband, who is a 33-year emergency medical physician, as well as a retired colonel of 28 years serving the military. I'm telling you the background because he's done a lot of research with this and seen such a huge, dramatic increase in patient care with the cannabis plant as well as the CBD oils. So we're in Oregon, and I saw that they were going to offer hemp license, and I was so excited about that I just started to do more research towards, putting forth what I wanted to do for the environment and people with their health. So I applied, and next thing you know, we got a license, and we contacted Edgar and became business partners and put in a crop this year. And I remember being out on the field and they had it plowed and we were planting the seed. And I knew that it was going to be irrigated, but just looking at the seed going in the ground, I remember looking at Edgar saying, is the seed going to stay in the ground or is it going to get washed away? Because I thought the irrigation would actually take it away. I wasn't certain that it was going to be able to stay in the ground. So we had some touch and go this year with the crop. And some plants did come up, but we did have some wash away through the irrigation. But next year we're ready to go and eager to do this. And I just wanted to say, hemp really is I'm doing it for first and foremost for the environment and for health and wellness, the interdependency that we have with ourselves and nature. But what it will do is with the supercapacitors, with hemp and graphene, I don't know if people know about graphene, but Google it. It's huge because it will power the energy of the whole world, not just our country, but the whole world with hemp. They're researching it right now. It's major. And actually, they're looking at spinal cord injury with hemp and graphene right now. So that's another thing. It's very, very key. Yay, exactly. So, what did Ron Paul just say? Rope, not dope. But I think they're both great, so we need both. And then also I heard that really hemp, the industrial hemp is a $1 trillion industry because of what it can do, cleaning up the environment from the imbalances, that's interdependency, that is key. And really, if we don't have an earth to walk on, you're not gonna have an earth to smoke the marijuana on. So hemp really will, the industrial hemp will really help to clean up that environment. So thank you. And I'm really proud and honored to be here to help humanity.
My name is Harry Ako, and I have my Kentucky gold from being in Kentucky. I am actually a biochemist, and I can write the isoprenoid pathway for you and end up with the cannabinoids and the terpenes and all that stuff. Yes, sir. Okay, so Cynthia Thielen asked me and said, let's continue our hemp project. The goal is to see whether we could grow hemp, industrial hemp in Hawaii. And my motivation is if we can provide economic development and economic goodies for people, that's good. And that's my motivation. I'm retired, so I don't need any more money.
I'm Cliff Thomason. We're growing industrial hemp in Southern Oregon in a small town called Murphy. A lot of the challenges we faced this year were a result of them waiting 5 years before they wrote the rules to grow industrial hemp. So while it's been legal in Oregon for over 5 years to grow it, they hadn't set the rules in place to establish those guidelines. And then came the passage of Measure 91, and then it threw everything kind of into a, a storm in which they're trying to create rules for 91 rules for industrial hemp, and they didn't get it right by any stretch of the imagination. At the time where everyone was looking to plant and struggling to get seed and land to plant it on, along comes the legislature and decides to try to throw a wrench into things, into doing everything from putting partial bans, moratoriums in certain counties, pinning systems, delays. When you're trying to farm hemp, trying to grow hemp, and then you have the legislature working against you, it was a real challenge. And for example, in Southern Oregon, and through many areas of the state, but more specifically Southern Oregon, there was the concern of cross-pollination, you know, and working with, you know, in through the medical and the recreational industries. You know, we found it prudent as farmers to only grow, you know, females to maturity in our area in Josephine County, and a promise that we would continue doing that. So we had to change our farming model. Instead of looking at all parts of the plant from the seed and the fiber and the flower, we had to focus mainly just on flower. And so it's turned us into, you know, CBD farmers of sorts, you know, growing industrial hemp for the high CBD in the flower, rather than growing for seed, for propagation, for breeding, or for the use of the fiber. And so that's a program that we're doing it down in there. And so we'll be able to hopefully provide a high CBD, low THC product for the market, and so be able to coexist with med and rec. You know, that was our solution. In other areas, next year we're planting 50 acres up here in the Willamette Valley and look to Eastern Oregon to grow so we can grow for fiber, for seed, and for all the other things that will help grow the economic development in areas, especially rural Oregon, is where, you know, where we're at. You know, we have a dream, and I share with Jerry that, you know, we'd love Oregon to be the largest seed bank in the United States. So where any state, whether it's the 10 original states part of the Farm Bill or all 50 states, look to get seed, they look to Oregon, you know, for that seed, because not only, you know, for all the seeds of all the cannabis varieties, whether it's for med, rec, or, you know, industrial, you know, we should be able to be that provider. And until we can get the state legislature and the Oregon Department of Agriculture and Oregon State University on board to help, you know, support this industry, it's going to be a real challenge. So we're looking in the short session coming up here in February, an opportunity to, again, forge the coexistence between all parts of the cannabis, you know, family, and to help create an industry in Oregon to provide for the rest of the country. I think it's important that we all, you know, pay attention to what's going to happen and embrace the entire cannabis industry and not take sides of whether it's, you know, for med or for rec or for, you know, in textiles. So, anyways. No, I think he was wondering if you're looking to be more politically active. I think it's important that, you know, all of us, you know, play an activist role and go, you know, when the session's in and there's bills that could affect the long-term viability of this industry, that you get involved. You know, I spent time up there. You know, I called myself the accidental lobbyist because of a bill that was going through that we helped get defeated that would have hurt the industrial hemp industry. You know, it's important to pay attention and not just rely on greater interests, larger interests that have lobbyists that they can afford to pay to fight things. You know, you can get involved, and most of your state representatives will listen to you. Yeah, funny.
Well, thank you. So you can, this is just a little bit of a hint of some of the issues and some of the successes and challenges that farmers are experiencing. In Colorado, just to give it a little bit bigger perspective, this industry is really still very much in its infancy. Certainly the outdoor industrial hemp piece as well as the outdoor CBD focus. In Colorado last year, we grew about 200 acres, and all of those farmers saved their seeds, and this year we grew about 2,000 acres. Most of those farmers are still saving their seeds. There will be some for sale, and they're hoping to grow closer to 20,000. So we're at the very beginning of a very, very large industry that has some challenges because there's a lot of different pieces to the puzzle. I think the idea of a seed bank is very, very important. However, certified seed has to be certified by the state. So what grows really good in Oregon is probably going to do something different in Louisiana or in Colorado or in Maine. So ultimately, we're going to have to get very active in our state legislators as well as national to really make this happen. And just a quick a quick note, the National Hemp Association is going to be focusing this coming year on legislation to help make hemp descheduled from the Controlled Substances Act, so we can import seeds, so we can extract from all parts of the plant, and so we can transport all this material all over the country. Because until we can do that, this industry is going to be very, very constrained about what it can really do. So I think at this point, I'd like to see if there's any either questions you have of one another, something you want to share as a follow-up. Oh, okay, and if you want to do questions, please go to that mic there so we can get it all on the recording.
To add something really quickly, we bring in close to 400 to 500 million a year of importation to make hemp products. Think about the jobs that we can create in this country alone. Even Thomas Jefferson said, what did he say? Hemp will restore, revitalize, and restore the economy and the health and wealth of all individuals living in that nation. That's huge. $400 to $500 million that we could have in our pocket and, you know, in employing people to process and build homes with it. Thank you.
Sure. I'd like to make a comment on that too. It doesn't take a long time to grow this either, so we can make it happen real fast. We're talking anywhere from 90 to 106 days to get full maturity. Nothing grows this fast.
Well, I have a question for all of you. I mean, seeing as you are all on the forefront of growing this crop or researching this crop, what suggestions would you have for anyone else that's thinking of getting involved in this industry, wherever they happen to be, and what do they need to know about before they actually jump into it?
Call me as soon as possible.
The biggest thing that I always say is limit your expectations. This is a brand new industry. There is a lot of potential, but there's a lot more risk, and at the end of the day, we're still farming, and there are inherent risks with farming. So though there is a lot of potential, I think we need to meter our expectations and have a lot to learn before we really.
And that's what came up for me too. I know with the legislature that, you know, they can put roadblocks and everything can come at you, but I'm determined and focused, and I'm going to get the job done no matter what, and there's not going to be any resistance. And I'm here to do no judgment and be righteous over anything. I'm here to work with people and really put that energy out, because really deep down the other side, they know too. Okay? So that's what I wanted to add.
You know, my one thing would be to say, don't have any expectations in your first year of growing. Because whatever they are, they're going to be wrong. It's, everything from finding that, you know, that the state's fighting you, or the lack of seed, or the high cost through the Department of Agriculture, or, you know, earwigs love to eat little baby starts. You know, you learn that deer may not like it for 3 months, and one night decide they love it all. And, you know, so you come across a lot of unexpected things. And so don't set your expectations so high that you need a return that year. It really, the first year is really learning, and thank goodness there's only a small group in Oregon, because we've been able to talk, communicate, network, and get a lot of solutions done. So that would be it. Just temper your expectations.
I think you are right on the dot, and the regulations are the thing to my mind. So if we can deregulate it, then sky's the limit.
Okay, you say that you're saving back seed, and there's nobody trying to claim your seed, like Monsanto or something like that. Is that your seed after you?
We've propagated our hemp, and we've harvested it at this point in time already, because of the weather, obviously. We're trying to let it grow as long as we could. But what happened was, is as far as you're talking about the Monsanto issue, we have our own seed. We found our own seed, and it's Oregon seed right now as far as we're concerned. We do believe that we're going to have to get certification in the near future, but at this point in time, we went ahead and did it. We didn't have a lot of people behind us. We kind of did it on our own, and all these people took a lot of time and energy and monetary to make that happen. So we believe it's our seed. This is Oregon seed. Thank you.
And I will mention that I know a number of other farmers in Colorado, Nebraska, Florida, other places who are harvesting feral seed that's been growing in their state for 70 years. And they're also then taking it and doing a breeding program so that it is their own seed. There's no licensing. Now, some of the other states, like Kentucky and Tennessee, they're doing a very controlled process where they end up, the State Department of Agriculture brings in the seed from a licensed, certified seller. They cannot replant that seed. So they're going to have to change those laws, or they're never going to have an industry in that state. But at the moment, that's what they have.
Having our own seed is huge. You don't need somebody from Kentucky telling you what to do with your seed.
Thank you. Thank you. Another question?
Hi, is this working?
Can you turn that one up?
I couldn't hear the man before me. Is it working now? Okay. Hi, I just want to say thank you for all of you to be here. I think it's great. I work for the government now. I say that because I'm disabled, and the government probably doesn't like it, though. But so since I have lots of time on my hands. Anyway, I just want to say I do a lot of research and community activism. I love living in Oregon. No, I was not born in Oregon, but I love it and hope to be here the rest of my life. Anyway, I'm sorry I came in late to your presentation, so I don't know if you covered this, but I'm very interested in hempcrete, because I've been poisoned by many things in our environment, my body. So I'm reading right now that you can only get hempcrete through the UK or through Canada, and that the United States does not have a hemp processing plant. So besides the wonderful work that you do in growing hemp, and I would love to be in some land and grow some someday, is there any plans? Do any of you know? Is there anyone working on a hemp processing plant in the United States? That would be great for the rural counties of Oregon, getting out of timber and other things and Monsanto crops. If we did a hemp processing plant and bring jobs and a sustainable factory, industry, whatever, more so to the state.
You know, all of those things, the hempcrete is a scale appropriate. You know, we're still, I'm in a state where I can't save my seed back. I'm bound by the confines of our agriculture department.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of those processing facilities that process the hempcrete cost a significant amount of money and require 50 to 100,000 acres to process, to run a shift. So you run into a sort of a supply issue. There's no incentive for Edgar to put in a $2 million processing facility when it's going to be 20 years before, not that it will be 20 years, I'm speaking in hypotheticals, but it's just a supply issue. It will happen. He just needs to get his seeds up and then sell them to me so I don't have to go to Europe or Asia or wherever.
You know, I also want to add hempcrete, it's mold and mildew resistant.
Yes. Yes.
Fire retardant.
Yes.
Resistant because of the bendable and flexible fibers.
It's a zero carbon building material.
Right.
And you know, like the LEED certification on buildings is great, but mm-hmm. we still build with 1% formaldehyde. We still build with toxins in the carpet, the drywall. So someone like me, who's right. extremely multiple chemical sensitivity syndrome, we need zero carbon, right. zero poisonous homes.
Right.
You want to do that LEED, but you've got people in Europe even who are reacting to the gases from the poisons that even in Europe they're still building homes with. And Canada still builds them completely with asbestos. So this is why I'm so excited about hemp, and I don't have 20 years, and I don't want to wait 20 years. But
you do have 20.
Hempcrete.
We're not going to have to wait 20 years. People stand up and start voicing your opinion to your legislature people. right? And there's some YouTube videos of, with a woman who actually, it's a great TED Talk. She talks about her son having all these autistic and major problems because of our environmental, and they built a home all in hemp crete and how all these things were going away. So it's coming out. And I think the more people stand up, the faster it's going to happen.
Well, education, you know, if you all help to educate too. You know, I mentioned hempcrete like at the Earth Day Festival at PSU because there was a woman with an LED booth, you know, the lead, you know, and I told her, and she had all the forms of insulation, and they're sprayed with formaldehyde. And so I was telling her, you can do hempcrete insulation, and it's poison, you know, it's zero, no poison, no carbons.
Thank you.
And so,
thank you
anyway.
Very much. Appreciate it. And I think what's important to understand is that this industry is fertile ground for any kind of entrepreneur. Because I know a grower in Colorado who just took all their leaves and their flowers off, and they now have 1,000 tons of stock that they don't know what to do with. So if you happen to be an entrepreneur and you want to do a hempcrete factory, there's sources for this. And part of our goal is to connect people together. So it's coming. It's not going to be 20 years. I'm going to get one more question here because I don't know how much more time we're going to have.
Hi, my name is Steve Sarich. I'm the president of the Washington State Hemp Commission. I just heard about this a couple of days ago and drove down this afternoon. And this is a perfect panel to answer because we're facing the same thing in Oregon and Colorado and Washington State right now. We're facing the problem of how are we going to get seed in, okay? And the Canadians, I wrote the Washington State Hemp Act, which we should be passing in January. They got screwed up and we didn't get it passed by the end of last session. Oddly enough, what we did pass that might be interesting to all of you that you need to get passed in your states is you need to pass a livestock feed bill, because that takes a year, because the states are required by the U.S. Department of Agriculture to do a study before you can feed any of that hemp product to livestock. So we did start that this year, so when we're able to grow this coming year, we will be able to have one more product that we can sell. But the problem I'm facing here is, while I've been talking to the Canadians about purchasing seed, and they've got good seed, and their prices are good, around $2.35 a pound versus what I can buy out of Colorado for God only knows how much per pound, up to $5,000, I understand. But they want some kind of assurance that we are not going to replant that seed. Now, let me say, I understand why, in some cases, that is not a good idea to replant seed, because in your monoecious cultivars, you're going to lose some of the characteristics if you keep planting the same seed over and over again. But I don't, also, we don't want to end up with the same situation that you now have in Colorado, where somebody is growing a field of hemp that is 14 foot tall down to 5 foot tall, and harvesting that is going to be a real problem on a large scale basis. I'm interested to find out what your opinion is on how we handle this whole thing with whether or not we are limited to certified seed or whether we just plant whatever.
Oh boy, seeds, that is a big problem. Trouble is, you mentioned Monalisius. In Oregon, we're going to try to get away from Monalisius strains, because Monalisius strains they don't have vigor. The pollen content is less. The seed yield is less. Europe has outgrown Monalisius strains to the max. Deosis is a strain that we're trying to do at our farms. In order to get that oat, we have to first get Deosis seeds. I was the first person in 110 years to ever try to import over a ton of Deosis seeds from Australia. As we speak, they're still set in customs in Portland. So,
can I tell you that you and I were going to split that shipment?
Yeah,
it was Frog One.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what? It's just as well we didn't get it, because I believe in the latitude that they're growing that in, they told me over the phone that they were growing three crops a year, and that's subtropical seed. That won't grow here.
No. So, yeah, it was a blessing in disguise.
Yes, the Australians are probably not people to look to for seed.
Yeah.
You know, in this industry, sometimes you have to go beyond the government to get to where you want to be. You know, we had plenty of seed for planting this year, and everyone that asked me, where'd you get it? I first told them I got it from God, because he was the first one to put it here on this earth as being the only seed, the only plant that can feed you, house you, clothe you, and heal you. But, you know, Google is an amazing resource for seed to get started, you know, in your hemp endeavor. There is a multitude of opportunities there. Like in Oregon, there's a Department of Agriculture didn't help us. Oregon State University didn't help us. So we had to help ourselves. And if you search hard enough, you can find enough seed, and it propagates at a rate that you can, you know, provide for a lot of acreage in a shorter period of time. It's just more expensive, but you don't have to give it back, and you know, you can keep replanting it, and you can get it certified through the state. So
I had a quick question. Have you guys figured out the enzyme pathway that differentiates hemp from cannabis? Other than oleftolic acid, there is another series of enzymes that are responsible for the aromatic side chain.
Yes, it's all known.
Say again?
It's all known. There was a gene duplication a long time ago, and one led to THC and one led to cannabidiol. So now every hemp plant has two of them. Some of them have more of one and some have more of the other. And
what's it called? What's the differing gene that differs the aromatic side chain from cannabis to hemp? Because there's a specific differential. Hemp doesn't have oleftolic acid.
There are two different enzyme systems.
Hmm. Is it akin to the Shikimate pathway? Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
We're just about at time. We're supposed to end at about 3:45, and I believe we're really close. So I don't know if there's any final closing comments anybody wants to make.
I have one final comment on seed. I was fortunate enough to work with a couple people in Silverton, Oregon, and we were blessed. We have a plant right now that is producing so much seed. There's more seed than there is flower or stock, basically. I mean, it is very, very seedful, and we've been really lucky with that. So we have a lot of, I mean, of course, we didn't grow a 100 acres or 1,000 acres or even 50 acres. But from what we did grow, we got an abundance of seeds. So we know that seed can be very valuable, but not only can it be valuable, but we can make this seed happen here in Oregon. So I think we're on the future of something really big here.
All right, well, thank you very much for all of your input, and thank you for your questions.